If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Okay, folks, you are listening to the latest chapter, latest exciting adventures from Life on Planet Porky with myself, the Porkmeister, and of course, the rock chick writer extraordinaire, Ms. Leslie Ann Jones. Leslie Ann, it's great to have you back on air. Where have you been?
All over the place.
Yeah, good.
you know when you sort of, you've been in so many different places day after day that you've forgotten where you are?
Yes.
It's been a bit like that, really.
Yes.
I know I was in Dublin, I was in Salisbury, I was in Exeter, back and forth to London and so on. Just, gadding around, promoting my book.
Yeah.
And things have been going really well. Really well received wherever I've been.
Excellent.
People are very kind.
I'm glad to hear it. Well, that's great. I know what you mean about not knowing where you are. I've been, to football matches and woken up literally the next morning and actually forgotten which country you were in. I used to travel with England all the time, and you go to bizarre places like Montenegro, which didn't exist like sort of 10 or 15 years before. You know what I mean? And I couldn't remember once when I woke up and I was doing a live show. I couldn't remember if we were in Croatia or Serbia. Because, you follow England around and their games are 2 or 3 days apart and that kind of stuff. But anyway, I know exactly what you mean. I'm delighted to say, Miss Jones, I'm planning to come to one of your launch nights. I think it's on July 13th. I think it's in Chiswick. I know I'm doing television that day, but that means that I won't be doing it the following morning. So I'm going to get over there and see you. This place in Chiswick is a bit of a rock, hard rock cafe or something, isn't it?
I think it's a pub, isn't it?
Yeah, pub.
George the Fourth or something.
It's got a bit
of a rock and roll reputation.
Yeah, it's got like a comedy night type thing, and local bands appear there. So it is the perfect venue for the rock chick extraordinaire. And to let everybody know, I'll be there July 13th, Chiswick. I'll drop you all a note beforehand. And if there's anybody there who wants to say hello to myself, as well as the rock chick writer, then it'll be great to meet everybody, will it not?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I'm so looking forward to it. And it's lovely to have your support, by the way.
Oh, absolutely, no problem. I'd be a fool not to support the work of art, which is the Stone Age. Now then, talking about stars, and I'm very excited. Miss Raducanu, Emma Raducanu, got through the first round of Wimbledon. I don't think she'll have played again by the time our millions of listeners are listening to this podcast, because it's almost live now. And I was absolutely thrilled with the way she powered through, two-set victory, but she just looked so steely and determined to me. And I didn't realise until I heard the commentator say it, that was the first time she's ever played on Wimbledon Centre Court, despite the fact that she's the US Open champion. So she, like, smashed Flushing Meadow and is the queen of the American courts. She had never played on Centre Court. Famously, this time last year, when she pulled out because of a strain or a thigh injury or something, that wasn't on Centre Court. Isn't that amazing?
It is astonishing, yes, that you can win the US Open without ever having stepped foot on Wimbledon Centre Court.
Yeah.
What I thought was extraordinary, she was absolutely weighed down with Tiffany jewels. She must have weighed twice as much as she did this time last year.
Yeah.
She's got the earrings going on, the necklace, the bracelets and the whole bit.
Yeah.
I always thought that jewellery, when you're playing tennis, is a bit of a distraction.
Well, it's funny you should say that. I mean, first of all, we all know she wears it because she is sponsored by Tiffany's, isn't she? They pay her an awful lot of money to literally wear it and advertise it. But in another sport, Formula One motor racing, Lewis Hamilton is in a big row with the organisers about the jewellery he wears and has been told he's got to take it all out. Now, he's taken some bit out, but some bit he says he can't take out because it's too intimately placed on his body. So I don't really, I don't really want to know too much more.
That'll interfere with your gear change. It would,
but that's the whole point. What the Formula One guys are saying is that in event of an accident, it could be lethal, you know, to have bits of metal attached to your body and all this kind of stuff. Whereas Lewis Hamilton says, I've been doing it for years, it's never been a problem. But anyway, getting back to Ms. Raducanu,
Raducanu,
Raducanu, I love it. Yeah, well done. And, you know, I'm looking at some of this morning's papers. She's on the front of the Times, Raducanu on sparkling form. I mean, it was a real breath of fresh air after all the bad news we've been receiving lately. But, no, there's been an awful lot of talk in the months, I think it's 10 months now, isn't it, since she won the US Open, that she's overindulged herself in commercial activities and sponsorships and not got back to, you know, practicing her tennis. But I thought she looked great yesterday, and I hope we're going to see her power through this tournament and become the Queen of Wimbledon. I mean, it's a lot to ask, but it would be great if she could.
It would be lovely to see. I think the whole of Centre Court fell in love with her yesterday.
Yes, I agree.
When she was interviewed at the end of the match.
Yes.
And she is so sweet and so refreshing, a breath of fresh air. She's unspoiled. Yeah. She's not full of herself, not up herself.
No.
And there's a lot of sportsmen out there could take a leaf out of her book right now.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. She's such a, I mean, she's taken it all so well and handles it so brilliantly. And I don't blame, excuse me, I don't blame her for cashing in on her celebrity. She may never be a Grand Slam champion again, so why shouldn't she cash in on the fact that she won the US Open as a teenager and as a qualifier? I mean, it's historic stuff. She's made, some people estimate, £10 million so far. Good luck to her. I hope she gets it all. Anyway, moving on from that, let's talk about another superstar, a real superstar. I know it's a couple of days now since Glastonbury, but I think people are still talking about Paul McCartney's performance. I thought it was sensational, but I have to say, I saw the very worst side of Twitter when people couldn't wait to get onto their phones and try and point out that Paul McCartney was 80 and it was showing. How mealy-mouthed is that about one of the greatest singer-songwriter musicians this country has ever produced?
It was the most astonishing thing I have ever seen. I cried all the way through.
Yeah.
I couldn't control myself. I was just amazed. Maybe I'm amazed.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm not amazed.
Yeah.
I knew it was going to be good. And, you know, a lot of people have said, why the hell put Diana Ross as the headliner on Sunday? Should have been Paul. Actually, I think he probably had a hand in that. He didn't want to be the main headliner of the whole festival.
Right.
He wanted just to come out and do his thing, which he does brilliantly.
Yeah.
He's got a sensational backing band behind him, really loyal, fantastic. They build up his part. No, his voice isn't what it was when he was 25.
Yeah.
But who the hell's is?
Yes.
It doesn't matter. When he got up on that plinth and did his song for John Lennon here today, and he did Blackbird just with an acoustic guitar, just his voice, not augmented by anybody else's, and the voice cracked, and it wasn't pure, but it was amazing. It was wonderful.
Yeah, I
think what you say about Twitter as well, I read a very interesting piece that broke down the statistics of the usage of Twitter, and fewer than a third of people in this country are even on Twitter.
I thought it was much less than that. I thought it was about 25% or something, you know.
Yeah, well, yeah. So, yeah, not much difference
sure,
there.
Sure.
But also, nobody's on it all the time.
Yeah.
So nobody is seeing everything all the time. So its impact is actually minimal.
Yeah.
And I think we need to disregard the mean-spirited and the foul-mouthed.
I just need to let
them be.
I totally agree. 90% of what appears on Twitter is generated by 1% of people who tweet. Do you see what I mean? So 1% of the fanatics, you know, and the people who are hermits and stay in their grubby little bedsit and just like to cause trouble around the world, they're the people who are putting out the offensive tweets against everybody else. It is such a misrepresentation of society. It's very left-wing, a lot of it. It's very politically motivated, a lot of it. And a lot of it is just spite and nastiness. So, you know, what amazes me is sometimes people make decisions on what they see as the response to something that's happened on Twitter. I just ignore Twitter. I ignore it. I use it as an information board to acquire information because it's got all the news channels on it and to share thoughts with other people. But, you know, I try to share happy thoughts, not nasty thoughts. You know what I mean?
Well, the vast majority of the coverage of Glastonbury, Paul McCartney's set, was positive. And if you think about it, there were 250,000 fans there.
Was that right? Is that the size of the crowd?
Yeah, 250,000 people experienced this. Yeah. He didn't make it a Beatles nostalgia trip down memory lane. Yeah. He was performing Wings songs and his newer solo stuff, as well as Beatles stuff that we're all used to from when we were kids. Yeah. He even got songs out from his 2018 album, Egypt Station, that most of that young crowd will never have heard before.
Yeah.
And yet they were going for it. They were just so full of him and so behind him. And I thought it was an amazing experience. We'll never forget that our whole lives. No, that was history we were watching.
I totally agree. Des Kelly is a mate of mine. He's a football reporter on BT. You know, there's all the Champions League games and all that. And he responded to some of the critics by saying, don't you realise that we are watching the modern day Mozart? And in 100 years' time, people will say, oh, Paul McCartney played at Glastonbury. Just imagine what it would have been like to have been there. That's literally like being in the opera house in Vienna listening to Mozart. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. My daughter was there. My elder daughter, Mia.
Oh, right.
She was on the stage, in the wings, taking part in all this. Yeah. And she's, what is she, 34? Yeah. She said, this is the most amazing experience of my life.
I agree.
And I don't think I will ever have such a high again. Mm. Now, she wasn't even born during the Wings era.
No.
You know, she was born in 1987. So she missed the Beatles, she missed Wings, and yet she thinks McCartney is a god.
That's right.
So that tells you everything, doesn't it?
What was she doing in the Wings then? Was she part of the production team?
She works for Island Records, which is part of the Universal Group. And they had a band called Easy Life, who were performing at Glastonbury. And, you know, it's access all areas for record company people, isn't it?
Oh, that's great. Brilliant. Who's the guy who's on the drums for McCartney? Does he do it for him all the time? You know,
Abe. Yeah, Abe's been part of his band for a long, long time.
Yeah.
But you will have noticed as well, if you watch very closely, he augments Macca's vocals quite a lot.
Yeah, right. Okay. Yeah, no,
I mean, Paul doesn't hit the high notes.
No, exactly.
But he can in his head voice, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, sure.
They have, don't they, the head voice and the chest voice. Sure. And he does reach those high notes in his head voice. It's very interesting. Yeah. And also when he rocks out, his voice seems to get stronger when he does the rockier numbers.
Yes, that's right. They all moaned. Why isn't he doing Beatles song? He started with a Beatles song, Can't Buy Me Love. So, you know, I couldn't understand that. But anyway.
Something else, though. When he brought on Dave Grohl from the Foo Fighters.
Amazing.
Did you not think that Dave Grohl was absolutely in heaven? The expression on his face, the way he kept looking at Paul, this was like, this is the greatest gig of my entire life.
Yeah, it was like a beatific look he had on his face. I totally agree. He was staring at Paul McCartney as though he was Jesus Christ.
He was.
I thought the Bruce Springsteen thing was rather odd. I don't know why they did a Bruce Springsteen song. I suppose it's to say, well, thanks very much for coming over from America to see me, and you're only doing three tracks with me.
Well, at Glory Days, also the Springsteen hit was a tribute to Paul for his entire career.
Oh, was it? Oh, I see. Right. Yeah. Okay. Right. Now, the superstars come thick and fast on Life on Planet Porky today. I'm getting very worried about the young footballer, Jack Grealish, you know.
Tell me about it.
Sorry?
Tell me
about
it.
Well, first of all, okay, he's Britain's most expensive footballer, £100 million. He went from Villa to Manchester City. He hasn't actually yet claimed a starting place in Manchester City's team, which isn't unusual these days because obviously they have big rotation squads and all that kind of stuff and put players to use where they are. But hours after they won the Premier League title, and that's obviously young Jack Grealish's first medal in football, he was seen on the streets completely blaggered, you know, putting his arms around fans' necks and having a laugh and a shout and all that. Fair enough, you say, they just won the Premier League. But the season was not over by any means. there was work to be done in the England camp and the England qualifiers, which they didn't do very well in. So Jack shoots off for 2 or 3 days, and then he's back with the England squad. That's all over. And next we see Jack is in Las Vegas with a crowd of mates. I wouldn't say there are any pictures of him particularly, you know, lashed up and all that, but nevertheless out partying. And since then, he's been, I think, to 2 different venues in Europe, to 2 mates' weddings, where, again, a great deal of drink was taken. One of them, I think, was a Greek island, and I think the other one was, I don't know, Portugal or something. But the point I'm making is that, Jack, you are a professional athlete, and professional athletes shouldn't really indulge in that sort of behaviour on a big scale. But secondly, you shouldn't do it publicly.
Absolutely. I mean, Harry Maguire can tell us kind of stuff that goes on in Greece, yeah, can't he? There are 2 things wrong here. One is the fact that he's 26 years old. Yeah. The second is the fact that he's being paid £100 million a year.
No, he's not. No, £100 million was his transfer. He's probably being paid. I mean, you're not far away. He's probably being paid about, you know, 150 grand a week.
With endorsements and all the other stuff that's going to come, you know, it's a ridiculous amount of money for such a young man. Yeah. And he's out there partying in his pants, singing with pop stars, sneaking off with mystery women, mystery brunettes, and all this kind of thing. Yeah. It could be all downhill from here if he doesn't buck up.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And, you know, people will turn on him if his level of performance in football doesn't, you know, stay as it is or even improve. People start having to go at him and say, oh, it's all down to lifestyle. I mean, you've got to remember when he was at Villa during lockdown, there's a famous picture of him standing next to his Range Rover, clearly having had a lot to drink, in a pair of slippers, trying to talk to a policeman and looking glassy-eyed. He never got prosecuted for it, so I'm making allegations that were never proven. But nevertheless, you know, for a professional footballer, it's a very bad image these days. Talking about professional footballers, of course, David Beckham is one of the most famous of all time. I still think he's one of the most famous men in the world. And you see his face on posters in Japan and Australia and the West Coast of America. And then, of course, we've talked about his son, Brooklyn, getting married to a young lady called Nicola Pletz. But Miss Pletz, since you and I last worked...
Or Peltz, I think they did.
Was it Peltz? Yeah. Pelts, you're right, yeah. Since you and I last talked about this, Miss Jones, seems now to have a view that Brooklyn wasn't brought up very well by his superstar parents.
Oh, this is not going to end well either. It's very, very unwise to attack one's mother-in-law.
Yeah. Especially if she's lie. Posh Spice.
Exactly. But, you know, Brooklyn is very close to his mummy.
Yeah.
So you don't come between a boy and his mummy.
Yeah. Well, you know, you say that, but, you know, you've got to defend your wife, haven't you? That's the big problem that Prince Harry, of course, has had for the last 2 or 3 years and seems to be getting worse. Read a piece.
But sadly for Harry, of course, his mummy isn't around anymore.
No, of course she's not. No. I read a piece, actually, just a couple of days ago from a guy, an English writer, lives on the West Coast. He says that Meghan's bubble is bursting. And I take no satisfaction in reading that, but it's something that we should have all really anticipated. You know, when she flew off to the, I think it's called Uvalde, it's the city in Texas where the last massacre happened at school. And all of a sudden she turned up in a private plane and she's, you know, kneeling by the crosses of the children who perished. And everybody thought that was all a bit distasteful.
Well, they were seen yesterday in Harry's black Land Rover driving into Oprah Winfrey's estate.
Oh, blimey.
And so the Mail have got hold of this and said they're speculating that maybe another tell-all interview is on the cards.
Well,
so is she going to moan about the Jubilee and how they were treated and how they weren't, you know, properly displayed as members of the royal family and all of that kind of thing? I mean, she's made a lot of faux pas. All her nonsense about, oh, Archie wasn't made a prince because he's black.
Yeah.
Well, no, he doesn't have the right to be called a prince, not until Prince Charles is king, if Prince Charles ever becomes king.
Absolutely.
And then it's within Prince Charles's remit, within his gift, to make Archie a prince or not.
Absolutely.
It's completely up to him or whoever is the monarch at that time.
Absolutely. Talking about people in the news, by the way, I see the speculation around that Johnny Depp might actually be offered another role as Pirates of the Caribbean, you know, Jack Sparrow.
Yeah, it's coming. They've forgiven him. He's been cleared.
No, you're joking.
It's yes, definitely. Have you not read the story?
Well, I thought it was speculation. I didn't realise, and I thought Johnny Depp's agents had denied it.
Yeah, well, they can deny it all they like. Mm. It's all about money, as you know.
Yep.
And this is free advertising. Imagine, you know, this guy is more famous than he's ever been in his career right now.
Yeah.
And he's been cleared of all wrongdoing. So it's a... Oh, yeah. Talk amongst yourselves, folks.
Thank you.
Sorry, that's a delivery.
At this time of day, wow.
Absolutely. Yes, I'm sorry, we're talking Johnny Depp. And
He's never been more famous. Yeah. Also, Amber Heard is in talks about a tell-all book.
Yeah.
I mean, she's going to compound her fracture all over again, isn't she?
Absolutely.
Really, if I were her, I would draw a line under it, shut up, go and live somewhere quietly, and do something else, start again.
Yeah, so no, I totally agree. But isn't it amazing how people can cash in on... I mean, you said, oh, Johnny Depp's been cleared. He's only been cleared in one court. He wasn't cleared in this country. But anyway, there we are. I tell you who's getting on my nerves again, and that's Gary Lineker, right? Because Gary Lineker came out with this absurd story that when he was a kid, he was... what's the word? He was attacked and mocked because he had dark skin. Don't you think that's cashing in a little bit over the top on the real problem of racial prejudice in society?
Oh, definitely. The guy is blind. He's blinkered. He's always annoyed me.
Yeah.
But yes, of course. He was from travelling stock, I think.
Yeah.
He has described himself as a gypsy in the past.
Has he? Yeah.
Ronnie Wood was a gypsy. You know, his family were water gypsies on the Thames. Mm. No big deal about that. You know, it's an ethnic group, isn't it? But I think, it is stretching the point a little bit. And whose problem are you trying to have here?
Yeah.
This is not his realm. He should shut up. Yeah. I sometimes think he thinks he's a politician because he makes all these pronouncements online, on Twitter and so on. He gets angry about stuff that is nothing to do with him. You know, he's a football commentator.
I totally agree. I mean, a few days before that, it was the heat wave, and he came out with another comment about, oh, people think it's just a hot summer. What about climate change? He gets involved in all these things. You're absolutely right. He's not qualified to speak about any of them. My theory about Gary Lineker, I knew Gary Lineker, you know, a bit because he was an Everton player many, many years ago. And, you know, you always look up to your idols and all that and, you know, kept in touch with the way his career went and all that. And he never used to make pronouncements like this. But I think what's happened is, I think he gets paid so much money for his job at the BBC, you know, around about £2 million. I honestly think that he tries to appear to be such an empathiser and sympathiser with causes which are popular in this country to make himself look like a good guy so that people won't start focusing on how much money he gets paid for basically comparing a once-a-week football show.
Exactly. And I think he's a prime example of the old adage... Adage, that's a good word, isn't it?
Yeah.
A little knowledge is a dangerous thing.
I totally agree. He sticks his nose in here, there and everywhere. And then when anybody says, hang on, Gary, you don't know what you're talking about, then he accuses them of being prejudiced, you know? But anyway, look, you know, each to his own, and I'm not...
We need a box, don't we, that we can put these people in. So Meghan Markle is in there.
Yeah.
Gary Lineker's in there now.
That's right.
I think Nicola Peltz might be in there today as well.
Well, she might be. We're having a go at everybody today. But it's not Have a Go at Everybody Day on Planet Porky, folks. Right. Okay, folks. Thank you very much indeed for tuning in to myself and the Rock Chick Writer Extraordinaire, Ms. Leslie Ann Jones. I'll tell you what's happened, Leslie Ann, since you and I last conversed. Sam Fox has got married, okay? And I saw her in a television interview. I think we spoke about her being on telly and all that. But I was absolutely, you know, knocked out by a full talk she gave about, you know, this is the best thing that's ever happened to her in her life. At one time, she'd received 10,000 invitations of marriage from men, and she ended up marrying a woman. So, and she says she's never been happier. So that must have been quite a life conversion.
She started nude modeling at 16. Yeah. You know, this was all down to her father who pushed her into it, which is a very weird thing if you think about it. Mm. Her dad was taking the first nude pictures of her.
Good
so
job.
Your primary relationship in your life, which is with your father, if you're a girl, that is your first male-female relationship. And if that goes horribly wrong, you're on a slippery slope there. Mm. So she grew up and she was exploited for her huge pair of boobs.
That's right.
And in the end, she grew sick of being ogled. Mm. And she coupled with another woman who wanted her for things other than the appendages on the front of her chest.
Yeah.
And that woman sadly died. They were together for a long time. Yeah. And happily for Sam, she's met somebody else with whom she touches base. They are soulmates. They're very happy together. Yeah. You can only celebrate that. Mm.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. She told the story when she was 14. She used to work on a fruit stall, you know, in the marketplace of the town she grew up in. I can't remember where it was. I think it was somewhere in Essex, wasn't it? And men used to crash their cars, literally, driving past this fruit stall, because even at 14, she was a very voluptuous young lady, you know? And, you know, she's had that effect on the male species ever since. So anyway, there we go. Now, Miss Jones, I have started a campaign which is still ongoing. It's called I Hate Summer. And I'm absolutely delighted to find that I'm not the only person on planet Earth who finds the sun oppressive, who finds heat unbearable, who wishes the summer months would just disappear and we could just leap from spring to autumn, because it makes my life so very, very uncomfortable.
Yeah, I'm with you. I can't go in the sun at all. I've had skin cancer several times.
Dear.
I've had all kinds of bits chopped off and stitched up and things, and I have to stay right out of the sun.
Yeah.
So although I love the sea, I love swimming in the sea, I like the beach, I can't go to the beach and strip off like most people can. Mm. So I'd be the one tottering down for a swim at about 6 o'clock in the evening. Mm. Which suits me because it's more comfortable by then.
Yeah.
I do love beach culture, but yes, I'm with you. When it gets too hot, it's horribly uncomfortable. You can't sleep, so you feel grumpy all the next
day
because you haven't had any shut eye.
Yeah.
And also insects, you know, especially if you're
totally
in foreign climes.
Totally.
I'm really bothered by insects. Yeah. I always get bitten by mosquitoes. The bites come up in huge lumps like eggs all over me. And it's just horrible.
Yeah, no, I totally
so I prefer the spring and the autumn.
Yeah, and me. I mean, I can't even go out in the if I, like, for instance, if I'm doing TV this morning, I take a spare shirt with me, because even in an air-conditioned car, by the time I get there, I'm like a wet rag, honestly. I don't know why, but it's the sunlight coming through the windows. You see what I mean? Even that affects me. But I can't walk in the sunshine. I get breathless. I feel so uncomfortable. You know, sometimes you meet up with friends and it's a nice sunny day and they all say, oh, come on, let's take a table in the courtyard. I have to go into the shade. I can't sit in bright sunshine.
No, definitely not.
You know, I'd feel it on my head and I'd feel my skin tightening up and all that kind of stuff, you know. But anyway, so I read a piece in the Daily Mail by Dr. Max Pemberton, and was thrilled that this medical doctor had said, I hate the summer, you know. So I wrote a letter to the paper saying, I am so relieved to hear that I'm not the only person who doesn't like the summer. And they published the letter, the Daily Mail. And, of course, I've had, you know, loads and loads of response, done a few interviews about it and talked to people about it. So I've started a campaign, Miss Jones. So you are now my first recruit officially.
I'm your disciple, Michael.
Absolutely, yeah. By the way, talking about health and things at the moment, I'm suffering a bad attack of sciatica at this very moment. And
that's a Welsh one, sciatica.
Sciatica, that's right, yeah. But I tell you, it is a real... have you ever had sciatica? It starts in the middle of your back and then wraps itself around your waist and goes down your front leg, and it makes it almost...
It sounds like falling in love.
Well, it's a bit like that, yeah, but it's the opposite, actually. But it's incredibly painful. A mate of mine who I bumped into last week, I was doing a job with Alan Brazil, my old mucker from TalkSport. We went over to this place where we were doing the job, and the guy who hosted it is a friend of ours, Dave, and... his sciatica was so bad, he had a walking stick, and he could just about get to the door to get in the car and back, you know what I mean? And he doesn't know what it is, but it's so painful. He's paying £1,300 for a private full body scan, you know what I mean? One of those tubes they put you in. What's it called? Body scanner? Body scanner?
Yeah, I guess so, yeah.
To try and find out what it is, because it's left him, like, unable to even walk, really. It can be a terrible affliction.
That sounds horrible. I'm so sorry for
you. Yeah, well, and trying to get up and down stairs. Fortunately, there aren't many stairs where there aren't lifts and escalators these days, but, oh, it can...
We're getting old is what it is.
Well, yeah, I suppose there's an element of that, although, you know, I think you're as old as you feel. Talking about hot weather, by the way, and obviously you and I both dislike it, but I do still like roast on a Sunday, right? And we've just had a Sunday, and I roasted a large piece of fillet of beef, and I can't think of anything more lovely, but it's the kitchen. How do you keep the kitchen cool when you're roasting and boiling vegetables?
Oh, you've got to open the back door, love.
Well, that's true. That's what I did, actually.
I had a roast last night. It's a funny thing. Oh. Yes, I had a chicken in the freezer that had been there for quite a while, yeah. And I thought, best get this chicken out and eat it. Mm-hmm. So I roasted it, had it with some lovely broccoli and carrots, yeah, and new potatoes and some homemade gravy and... Yeah. Yeah, it was very fine.
Very good. I'm delighted that that's one thing you don't have to give up in the summer. Now, another mate of mine, a lad called Gareth A. Davis, is a boxing writer. And when I worked in radio, used to use him regularly on the radio. He'd come in, lovely guy, long flowing hair, glasses. He, like your father, he'd been to every big fight for the last 30 years, you know what I mean? Knows Las Vegas better than he knows London and all that kind of stuff. And then I suddenly, flicking through the Daily Telegraph, and I saw this full-page feature, it was Gareth A. Davis, and he was talking remarkably about how he likes solitude these days and doesn't mind losing friends. Quite a remarkable piece, actually. And because I've known Gareth for a long time and he's always been a very sociable character. But he said as he's got older, he's found his own company better than anybody else's.
Yeah, it's interesting this. I've been thinking about this friends thing for quite a while, yeah, now, because I feel like I've lost a lot of friends as a result of the pandemic.
Yes.
People I used to speak to and see regularly who I never hear from anymore.
Yeah.
And once your kids grow up and leave you, yeah, so you've then got the empty nest thing as well.
Yes.
And you can find that you're spending more and more time by yourself.
Yeah.
And part of me thinks that's really sad. And the other part, yeah, of me thinks, well, this is great, mm, because I haven't had time to myself for a long, long time. Mm. And you get much more done. You get more work done, all, yeah, that kind of thing when you're not out socializing all the time.
Yes.
But I think friendships go in phases. We have different kinds of friends for different periods of our lives. Yeah. And then we get to a stage where perhaps we feel like we don't need other people anymore. Mm. Although I read a report from Harvard in the last few days, yeah, which is telling us that loneliness kills, basically. And if we are not in partnered relationships, we're less likely to live as long as people who are married or coupled in some other way.
Is that right?
Yeah.
That's amazing. The piece here I've got about Gareth, it says, "Who needs friends? I'm just as happy on my own." Reassessing his life after 2 years of upheaval, Gareth A. Davis came to the conclusion that he only needed to surround himself with a few positive, life-affirming people, made a conscious decision to weed out friends and take stock of my life. I've been doing that all my life. I realised at the age of about 30 or 35 that friends, you know the old expression, a friend in need is a friend indeed. From about that age, I worked out that a friend in need is a bloody nuisance, to be honest, because, you know, you feel an obligation, you've got to help. I've always helped people all my life, always, but I can't think of anybody, a friend, who's actually helped me, to be honest. I'm not moaning. I'm not saying poor old me, nobody's ever helped me. What I'm saying is that my natural instincts have always been to help people. You know, I had a mate who ran into terrible problems financially and I helped pay off his tax bill. I've got another friend and I paid for her daughter, partially paid for her daughter to go through university for 4 years. I've got other friends who I've helped secure jobs One bloke came back from America after working there for like 20 years, had no references in this country. So I introduced him to people and I got him some references and eventually helped him to find a job. I've always done that because I've always thought that I should, you know. I've had a very good life. I've been lucky in many respects. I've had great jobs and all that kind of stuff. And I've tried to share my good luck. But nobody has ever done the reverse for me. I mean, to be fair, I've never gone to anybody and said, can you help? You know what I mean? But some people have put the boot in on me just out of envy, jealousy, nastiness, wanting to put me down. And I've never had that instinct.
That's such a shame to hear. I'm so sorry.
Well, I'm not moaning about it. I'm just saying that's life.
So, no, I know, you know. But I want you to know, first of all, that I'm here for you, that I'm your friend.
Well, that's very kind.
Whatever you need me, whatever you need, you can pick up the phone and I'll be there.
Yeah.
I think that's really sad that people haven't helped you back. Mm. But I think a lot of it is to do with the fact that you look so strong and successful out there. And you do have an invincibility about you, especially when you think of all the health issues that you've come through and you've conquered and survived. Yeah. And maybe it's people just think he doesn't need help.
Well, could be, I suppose. Yeah, I mean, I do try to present an image of, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? I'm confident. I know what I'm doing. All is well with my life. But we all know things aren't always well with your lives. There are always things in the background you're trying to sort out. You know, you're having a row over some dispute involving money with somebody or a property lease or something like that. I've all got problems. But anyway, as I say, I'm not moaning. Years and years ago, I felt that a friend of mine's children were just not playing the game. You know, I was buying them very expensive presents. I didn't think that they were grateful for them. I thought they took me for granted, started moaning that the presents weren't good enough and all that kind of stuff. And I just cut that friend off completely. That was it. I thought, I don't have to put up with this. What am I doing? Why don't the parents discipline the children and stop them talking to me like that? So I just cut it off because I felt I was being taken advantage of.
They actually said that the presents weren't good enough.
The insinuation was that we expected much more than this. In fact, I think one of them actually said, oh, I was expecting much more than this, you know. And at that point, I thought, what's going on here? I'm not having this anymore. So I just cut it off. And then, excuse me, for the rest, I've found that because I've done okay in life, people expected more from me than I expected from them. Do you see what I mean? Mm. But anyway, look, it sounds like it sounds like
No, it doesn't sound like you're moaning at all. It doesn't sound like that. But yeah, look, there comes a time to let certain friendships go.
Exactly.
There always does.
Exactly.
And we just have to be very cold-blooded about it and say, well, this isn't working as a two-way street anymore.
That's right.
So now it's going to be a dead end.
Yeah, absolutely. And as I say to everybody listening to this, I haven't started this as a rant. It's my mate Gareth A. Davis actually wrote it and has come to the same conclusion as me. I think the people that I would most worry about losing his friends is my family, because when your last days come and you're lying in bed in a hospital or something like that, the only people who are going to sit at your bedside are your family. So I try to make sure that nothing goes wrong with familial relationships, because I believe they're the strongest you've got.
Totally. I've got three adult children, as you probably know, and when I think about the rest of my life, the only people I really want there in all certainty is my three kids.
Yeah, yeah. No, absolutely. And that's what my mum always used to say, you know, as long as I've got my children with me. And, you know, sadly, mum's not with us anymore. But the problem is, you know, I look back now and think I never spent enough time with my mum. I should have got down to Bournemouth more often. But, you know, I was building a career and trying to do it and all that. Now, talking about family, I'm quite I quite admire the two Maxwell brothers, the sons of Robert Maxwell, who have stood so closely to their sister, Ghislaine Maxwell, who, as we are speaking now, Miss Jones, is about, I think, to be sentenced in America for her crimes. And, you know, we've all followed the case so carefully. I usually feel sorry for somebody who I think is going to be banged up for another 50 years, not that she'll live 50 years. But in this case, I'm finding it very difficult to find sympathy for Ghislaine Maxwell, having read the full extent of the crime she was convicted of.
Yeah, I agree. I think Ian and Kevin are blinkered. She is their sister.
Yeah.
They don't want to believe a lot of the allegations that have been made against her.
Yeah.
I think it's all relative as well. There are any number of young lives ruined by what she did.
Yes.
By the things she took part in. Yes, maybe she was lured in by Jeffrey Epstein and a side of herself was brought out that should have remained buried, whatever. She did it. She did it. Mm. She did these things, whatever her motive, which was probably to stay in with him, because I think she was obsessed with him. I'm not sure you can call that love. But all these women who've had to go into their lives have had ruined relationships because they had a skewed version of what a man-woman relationship is all about because of what Ghislaine Maxwell and Jeffrey Epstein did to them.
Yes.
So, you know, you compound those, multiply those. And if there are 20 women who've all had that experience and a sentence of so many years is all handed down, you know, you just multiply it.
Yeah.
And if that adds up to 50 plus years, then that is what she should get.
Yeah, no, I agree. And by the way, when you've led the lifestyle she did, flying around in private jets to private islands and mixing with Bill Clinton and all that, I mean, that is quite a contrast, isn't it? To spend your life in a prison suit in a jail and you never see daylight again. But as I say, I've read the cases over and over again, and there's still people, you know, want to sue her in civil suits and all that kind of stuff. So as I say, I found it real. But there we are.
I don't think she'll survive. I think if she goes down for a long, long time, that she might meet a similar demise to Jeffrey Epstein.
I never thought she'd reach court. I said to everybody when she was arrested that there's a little black book somewhere with the names of clients in it, right? And somebody, some very powerful man somewhere in the world, wherever it might be, Russia or the Middle East or America, will make sure she never gets to court. But none of the names ever came out, did they? And still haven't, if you see what I mean.
No.
I mean, seen pictures of Bill Clinton on the plane and all that, but always statements issued, you know, no suggestion whatsoever that Bill Clinton, you know, took advantage of the situation that Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell were accused of. So it's never come out. But I agree with you. I didn't expect her to make it, although apparently she's on such a high suicide watch now. You have a special smock that you wear, which will break if you try to hang yourself with it and all that kind of stuff.
Oh,
you know?
God, it's grim.
Yeah, it is absolutely grim. Now, talking about women, and let's go right to the opposite end of the scale, what about Miss Kate Bush? Isn't it amazing that she's running up that hill again after 37 years, I think?
Well, it was because that song, Running Up That Hill, was chosen for the series Stranger Things.
Yeah.
And so all these kids think it's a new song because they weren't around however many years ago when that song was originally released and was a hit.
Yes.
So they think this is new material.
Yeah.
They don't even know who Kate Bush is
because
she's one of these true complicated artists. She never played the game.
Mm.
She never sold out to publicity.
Yeah.
She started out as an artist at a very young age. Mm. She was only about 12 when she was writing songs.
Yeah.
And she expressed herself as she wanted to. She was a dancer primarily, but she had a beautiful voice and she did have a talent for songwriting. But she's done it her own way all the way through.
Yes.
So because we haven't been exposed to her as a celebrity, she's sort of been forgotten to a large extent, but here she is again.
Yeah.
And she's an amazing talent.
Yes, she is. It's an amazing song, that Running Up the Hill. Like, years ago, I used to like the haunting sort of, you know, melody and all that kind of stuff. And I could never understand Wuthering Heights because it didn't even sound like a song to me. It sounded like a woman speaking in a very high-pitched voice.
Well, it's a masterpiece. It's an absolute masterpiece. Remember how young she was? I think she was 15 when she recorded that.
Yeah.
But to have written a song so mature at that point in her life, it's just extraordinary.
Yeah.
And the footage of her dancing that song,
it is.
She literally expresses it through dance. It's amazing.
Incredible. Somebody called her a poor man Stevie Nicks.
No, I think she's probably a rich man, to be honest.
I would think so as well. The one song I did recognise of her, which I thought was great, was Babushka.
Great song.
Babushka, babushka, babushka. And there was a bar just down the road from the Daily Express office, which changed its name to Babushka when that came out as a sort of worldwide hit. And, you know, he just cashed in on the name Babushka and turned his bar into it. But anyway, there we go.
So you listen to the lyrics of that song, and it's another great story. She writes these stories within her songs.
Really?
And it's a story about a woman who wanted to catch her husband out because she thought he was having an affair.
Oh, blimey. Well,
and then I tell you one of her other masterpieces. Yeah. Really must listen to this if you haven't heard it. The Man with the Child in His Eyes.
Oh, yes. Yes.
What an amazing song that is.
Yes, it is, isn't it? Amazing words as well. The Man with the Child in His Eyes. Absolutely fantastic. You're absolutely right. Anyway, as we speak again, Miss Jones, the slippery pig, or the greasy pig, I think they call him. That's Boris, the greased piglet. We don't know whether he'll slip free again, do we? David Cameron called him the greased piglet who always manages to slip free, but he's over, as we are recording this, he's over in, not sure where it is, he's with Macron, the G7. Where's that?
Oh, in Bavaria.
Bavaria, that's it, well done, yeah, in Germany.
I'm catching your throat thing.
Yeah, I don't know why, it's just come up this morning. That's another
it's
thing.
It's a bit dry this morning, I think.
Yeah, it's another thing about the summer, you wake up with a dry mouth, okay, even if you have nothing to drink.
Ooh, Mrs.
Yeah, excuse me,
family show.
Yeah. But anyway, look, I think the country's in absolute chaos now, and I've been a big supporter of Boris Johnson. I like his personality. I like his, optimism, his bounceability and all that. But I just think it's like a wrecking ball now. He's just moving from one disaster to another. And I just want, you know, if you vote for a guy to be a prime minister in this country and he's a Tory, you expect Tory policies. Doesn't matter what your own thoughts are, you expect Tory policies, and there aren't any Tory policies. To me, it's all a mystery.
It is a bit, and this the whole G7 thing. I mean, what about him and Macron? Le bromance.
Exactly, bromance.
They're both a bit desperate now, aren't they?
Of course
they are. Cuddling and posing, and, you know, that we've had months of tension over the war in Ukraine.
Absolutely.
The Channel migrants, Brexit. Yeah. And now there seems to be some suggestion that Macron is going to launch an EU-lite group of affiliated nations.
Yeah.
I think we don't trust Macron, do we?
Yeah,
because he still appears very close to Vladimir
Absolutely.
Putin.
He's ringing up Putin every 5 minutes, trying to broker a peace deal, you know, undercutting, in my view, the Ukrainians and President Zelensky. And, you know, Macron wants for two reasons. He wants to appear to be the world statesman. Look, I found a peace deal. And secondly, of course, the economy of the continent, Germany and France in particular, is reliant on Putin's gas, so they've got to try and find a solution to it all. But anyway, look, this is high level politics, Miss Jones. I think you and I are better off sticking to the things we know. Rock and roll music in your case, and what a decent pint of beer tastes like in my case. So
and football.
Yeah, and a bit of football. There's no football on at the moment, of course, but
there
we go. Right, okay, folks, that's Life on Planet Porky for another week. Thank you very much indeed for having joined us. And the Rock Chick writer and myself will be back with you next week. David Beckham is one of the most famous of all time. I still think he's one of the most famous men in the world. And you see his face on posters in Japan and Australia and the West Coast of America. And then, of course, we've talked about his son, Brooklyn, getting married to a young lady called Nicola Pletz. But Miss Pletz, since you and I last worked...
Or Peltz, I think they did.
Was it Peltz?
Yeah.
Peltz, you're right, yeah. Since you and I last talked about this, Miss Jones... seems now to have a view that Brooklyn wasn't brought up very well by his superstar parents.
Oh, this is not going to end well either. It's very, very unwise to attack one's mother-in-law.
Yeah. Especially if she's lie. Posh Spice.
Exactly. But, you know, Brooklyn is very close to his mummy.
Yeah.
So you don't come between a boy and his mummy.
Yeah. By the way, talking about health and things at the moment, I'm suffering a bad attack of sciatica at this very moment. And
that's a Welsh one, sciatica.
Sciatica, that's right, yeah. But I tell you, it is a real... Have you ever had sciatica? It starts in the middle of your back and then wraps itself around your waist and goes down your front leg, and it makes it almost...
It sounds like falling in love.
Well, it's a bit like that, yeah, but it's the opposite, actually. You know the old expression, a friend in need is a friend indeed. From about that age, I worked out that a friend in need is a bloody nuisance, to be honest.